right, so I don't know. Let's dive in. Where are we? Check this out. We're in a warehouse.
In a warehouse?
Kind of, sort of.
Is it? What is it?
This is our new spot, y'all!
Woo! Yay, we did it.
So this is, for those of you that are just listening on the podcast and not watching on video, we are inside our gutted out brand new building. I am feeling all sorts of magic, all sorts of badassery, and I'm super, super excited. It's basically we're just in a warehouse, concrete floors, brick walls, cinder block walls, and a whole lot of love and vision, because it's a shit show right now.
Yeah, so we bought this building back in December of 2020, the end of 2020, and on today's podcast, we want to talk a little bit about how were we able to create that possibility, right? So the idea is to inspire other like-minded hairdressers or salon industry people or people who are having goals with the intention of creating wealth in the future. How do you do that? But really, it's been also a personal dream of mine and yours as well, mm-hmm. to own our property, own the salon mm-hmm. that we're in. Mm-hmm. So our current location, which is up the street on Mills Avenue, in Mills 50 here in Orlando, Florida.
And this one's still in Mills 50.
Yeah, so this one's still in Mills 50, but amazing. It's on 50, which is Colonial, which is a major mm-hmm. thoroughfare in Orlando, Florida. So we're super excited that we were able to stay within our district mm-hmm. and in the area that we really, really, really love and enjoy being in, right?
Yeah, don't you love it? The community's just grown so much. All the community leaders that are you know, on the board, Joanne Grant, of Mills 50 has just been amazing. Patty Sheehan, which are all women. Thank you very much.
Yeah. International Women's Day, right?
Yeah, I think it was like yesterday, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. So.
But it's great. I'm lucky, and we're lucky and blessed. But how, dive a little bit deeper into that, into your thought process. What do you mean? How did we do that? How did you...
Well, for number one, I guess we always mention this, and we've mentioned it with each other, to the team, and different aspects. It's there's no such thing as luck. It's where preparation meets opportunity, right?
Amen.
So the idea behind that is being prepared, and we've been looking and looking for a building at least 3 years, right?
Oh, well, since before the baby. The baby's three.
So the baby's three.
So
the
I would say
baby girl,
4 years.
Phoenix.
It's been four years. Yeah.
And we were really trying to.
1 year's gone because of the pandemic. Right. So that was a shit show. So right. We've been looking for 4 years.
So the crazy thing is, and this could be a point in this conversation too that I want to bring up. Not only we were prepared, and then the opportunity arose, obviously, because of this horrible pandemic that we were in 2020. You know, the discovery for me was just the preparation and how dedicated we were with having the eye on the prize, right? Mm-hmm. Having mm-hmm. our goal, mm-hmm. that was our goal. But then the other aspect of it, I felt, and I don't know about you, because I don't know if we've talked about this, but this would be good to talk about, is I had mentioned it to many, many, many people, many clients,
mentioned
many
what?
Friends that were looking to buy a building,
oh, uh-huh.
that were looking to purchase, mm-hmm. and I felt nobody took us serious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I really felt that. And I feel like in the hair industry, as hairstylists, yeah. I don't know, mm-hmm. Are they not taking us serious? Are they not taking you mm-hmm. serious? Mm-hmm. And why is that? Is it because we're hairstylists? Is it because we're hairdressers? Mm-hmm. Why is that? Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, I didn't.
Well, I think the majority of people out there think of hairstylists as, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, they categorize us into a little, you know, situation where, oh, they might be partiers, they might be this, mm-hmm. they might be that.
High school dropout.
They have the, you know, this preconceived notion of they can't make X amount,
mm-hmm.
Which is so stupid. And it's just sad is what it is. But I think, you know, we talk about this all the time. Chelsea, one of our stylists, Chelsea Milligan, one of my favorite stories of her mm-hmm. was, you know, she was going to lease apartment, long story short. The leasing agent, a premier apartment, which was very expensive here in downtown Orlando. But the leasing agent didn't believe that she made the amount of money that she was making on her applications. So she called me and wanted me to verify, and then that wasn't good enough, so then she had to email it with my signature, and that wasn't good enough, so then she wanted my letterhead, and then that wasn't good enough, then we had to have a phone call. But that was one of my favorite stories, and I was just like, damn, fuck you, bitch. Yes, she makes more money than you. She works her ass off. She makes a great living. She can afford this apartment. Like, what more do you want? So, but same thing, right? Like, why people think that our industry is...
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I guess that there is maybe some of that. You know, obviously in every industry there is a little bit of that. People like to hang out, party, and this and that. And however, but, you know... For me, I remember vividly speaking with a couple of people, and whether they're bankers, financial planners, and I don't know.
Like clients of yours?
Well, clients or just random people that, you know, you meet and networking with or whatever, and I felt they just never took me serious. And for me, I used that, instead of making it negative, I used it as my positive to kind of really make it happen.
Like fuel.
So, yeah, that was my fuel to really continue to get after it, because when you show up to do your thing and then all of a sudden, you know, all of these, I don't want to call them haters, but naysayers or whatever, they turn around and look at you and they're like, wow, you guys actually did it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That is kind of what gives me the energy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not anything, you know, for me, it was really important to kind of never forget the goal that we had, right? Mm-hmm. Continue to get after it until, you know, we got the space, you know, like even our landlord, you know, we had offered him money to buy the building that we were in currently. He didn't want to, obviously, because he has something good going on there. We had a long-term lease, so I knew that, you know, that wasn't going to be a possibility. But, you know, how do you do that in a pandemic or in normal times? Right now, everything is getting better. We're in Florida. Everything is really opened up. Business is great. You know, everything is still moving forward, and we were able to do it. So I know, you know, for me, the value is how did we do it, and kind of going after that. For me, that was one of my main drivers, was seeing all these naysayers and thinking we couldn't do it.
Well, you're so good about just putting your head down and working. I mean, we both are. Like, we don't pay attention to the noise. We don't pay attention to what's going on around us because we have our team to take care of and our business. But that's one of your gifts, is you just don't pay attention to the noise, don't pay attention to the naysayers, and you just put your head down and work. And now look what we have to show for it. Thank you.
Yeah, we're in a beautiful building right now. It's 5,000 square feet.
I mean, it will be beautiful couple months.
We're in permit phase, so it's like hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
So those of you that have built out salons, you know what that feels like. Timeline is like...
How many build outs is this for us?
Probably...
One, two, three, four. This is our
fourth or fifth.
Just alone. Yeah. And then he's done five or six.
A few more.
Before came into the picture.
It's always one of those things, you know, but I've never owned the property that we were building out. So this is a whole different animal because of that too. Mm-hmm. We're doing everything by the book. Everything is under code because we want to make sure everything is real specific to the city code and all that.
You may or may not have, you know, pulled permits in the past. You know, no big deal.
Yeah. So, but you know, we were just renovating back then.
Yeah, now, small changes.
This is a major, you know,
we
have
put
major money into the space. New roof, new AC, new power. Everything is gonna get new. So obviously, that's a whole nother strategy, and because of that, we have to hurry up and wait. Mm-hmm. So, thankfully, we don't have to.
So, how did you do that in a pandemic and move forward? Was that scary for you when, oh shit, we found a building?
Well, we were, number one, we were prepared financially.
That's
a big one.
Just to set the tone here, the world was shut down.
Right.
We were shut down. We didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. Nobody knew what was going to happen, right? I think in general, people either go into a fight or flight when they get something traumatic happens to them, whether it's their pet dying or a divorce or a pandemic or whatever, right? But I think it totally was like fight mode, because obviously we're not doing the latter. But what was it? Was that scary for you? I know I was scared shitless.
For me, no. I remember having a Zoom meeting with the team, and us talking to them, And or it might have been before Zoom. It was the last meeting at the salon before we were, you know, shut it down. I just remember vividly just telling them everything's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. We are not going to shut down regardless mm-hmm. if we have to for a couple weeks moving forward. You know, mm-hmm. I knew that deep down we were going to be fine. And I had always that mindset and belief that we were going to be fine. And mm-hmm. and number one, because of who we were as leaders and also understanding the framework of what we built mm-hmm. with the structure and how structured you were with the girls and having everything in line, and you know, really paid off in the future, you know, because I would have never thought we would, like, if you look at it and kind of going through the year that we did and where the year that we had, we were, you know, we were definitely scaling up.
But then, like, whenever this building came available and we were like, oh shit, this could be the one. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember having conversations with you going, is this a good idea? What right. the fuck oh, are right. we doing? Yeah. Like, is this a good idea? Yeah, we're yeah. shut down.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I could start crying right now because I just remember that feeling and it comes back so vividly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was fucking scared for my life. Mm-hmm. I was scared for my life, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, who wasn't during the pandemic? We yeah. were fucking scared. Nobody knew what was going to happen. It was the unknown.
Yeah.
And then we're having this conversation let's buy a freaking very expensive building yeah. and put money down and dipping into our life savings and you know, what does that look like? But I remember being scared shitless. You weren't scared at all?
No, I was not. I didn't have any, number one, because I didn't have any idea. And I've really tried to train myself not to judge anything in any way. Mm-hmm. And the little voice gets in everybody's head and magnifies all the stories that happens.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And I've been the past, I don't know, you know, decade, I've been really diving deep into that. What does that little voice look like? Mm-hmm. And how big is it?
That is a testament to who you are as a leader, because you and I both have had so many self-help classes, books, for lack of a better word, self-help, but personal development mm-hmm. classes, mm-hmm. personal development for us to be better leaders, for mm-hmm. us to be better, you know, owners, people in general. But that is probably hundreds of thousands of dollars that we've spent on personal development classes to have that mindset.
Right, yeah.
So I don't think that's something that comes easy. I don't think it's something, like you said, it's trained. It's yeah, like so you it's have to train your mind.
Yeah. You have to train your mindset. And so when we were dealing with all
which
that,
which does not come easy for me, it comes easy for you.
It doesn't come, I don't think it comes easy for anybody. No, it's not easy for anybody.
Yeah.
I think the number one is to understand that it is there. And number two, you know, you have to acknowledge it and then make it disappear. And then how you do that, and then not really listening to any type of fear, nonsense, or this mm-hmm. or that. And I don't know, I just had 100% belief that we were gonna be okay when the opportunity came about, and knowing that we were looking for years and years and years for the building, mm-hmm. building, mm-hmm. and the opportunity came up and it was in the pandemic. I was like, all right, this is it. This is our one chance. And if we don't do it now, we'll never, ever be able to do it again.
What's the saying you always said to me since before we got married? Because I'm such a warrior. Don't think, just do.
Yeah, don't think, yeah.
Don't
yeah.
think, just do. Don't yeah, think, just do. And I remember crying to him, is this a good idea? Like, what yeah. the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
And he still says it to me during this day when I have my freak out moments. He said, babe, don't think, just do. Don't think, just do. This yeah. is on the right, you know, because I do, I can overthink it and I can yeah. freak myself out, right?
Well, your mind, once you get busy on something, then your mind goes away from what you originally were thinking, that right. original thought. So that's why I'm always kind of preaching that, don't think, just do, because mm-hmm. the doing part, the action part, is where you actually are able to get out of that space.
Right.
Then you're able to kind of go into mm-hmm. the new space of, okay, what is my goal now?
Right.
That kind of changes your mindset.
Right.
But I knew that if this was happening, it was for a reason. And I also knew that once we get open, I don't know if it's going to be on the market anymore, and I don't know if we're going to have the opportunity
right.
to buy it.
Right. Because
we lost how many buildings?
Oh my gosh. We've probably had 10 under contract.
Yeah, and every time we would lose it, we just never
for whatever reason.
Deterred.
Like
just continued the grind of, you know, all right, the next day there's going to be something out there, and then the next day would come and there was nothing, then we just kept on going, you know, we kept on grinding until we found not only the right space, but also I think there's a right broker that you need.
Oh, Jesus.
We got Tony Nguyen. Tony Nguyen, he was awesome.
I don't know what it is, but commercial brokers, y'all need to get your shit together. like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you just gotta find it's like the right,
not
find the right
them,
hairdresser, right?
Yes.
You gotta find the right person.
But like,
person
we're a really hustler mindset. Like, we just go. We work 24 hours a day, basically. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of commercial brokers do that. There are some. Ours, Tony Nguyen.
He's awesome.
Of NPNG?
No, I think it's TRG.
Shit, we should know that. Tony, I'm so sorry. But Tony Nguyen in Orlando, Florida, he's shit.
Fantastic. But, you know, for me, I knew that, you know, once he kind of found the space for us and we knew, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. It has 52 parking spaces. Our current location has 6, which is crazy to think about, just that alone. And, you know, the number one thing salons really struggle with is parking. So for us, you know, we had to switch our strategy from the right building or the right building size to the right parking first, and then kind of the building came after. So
I don't know. That was never my. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, you were the one that said it to me.
No, it wasn't like, let's not make that number one priority.
Well, no, but that remember when we found that one place on Virginia, that's when we really, I think, shifted that mindset, because that building was kind of weird, but the parking was
that
amazing.
That was a great building.
Remember? The building was like a bowling alley, and then all of a sudden, this big giant auditorium in the back.
Oh, that one. Yeah,
And that one is what, at least for me, it switched my mindset. I was like, oh, okay, so we should look for parking. Because we could literally make any building work if we were going to try to make that building work. Remember?
Yeah.
So.
Everything happens for a reason, though.
Yeah.
I'm excited to move forward and see the vision with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. And, you know, and what people don't realize, too, I want to touch on is that's just the beginning. That's like almost. And we've been thinking about that for years and years and years, right?
What?
Just the goal of purchasing a building. Mm. Right, that's just the beginning of, that's not even the beginning of the journey of Educe, right? Mm-hmm. Of anybody's salon, you have your beginning, but what does the journey look like for you? How are you continuing that as an owner slash leader slash how do you continue to move the needle forward or move the train forward without like getting derailed by a pandemic, you know, like not allowing that to, you know, suppress your dreams? Because if we did, imagine we would just be at home scared, you know, like there's clients now that are still, that I haven't seen for 10 months that are coming into the shop now, now that vaccines are out and people are feeling more comfortable and stuff. Like we've been in the front lines and people say we're not essential workers, but I feel like hairdressers are, especially in this day and age, because we are like in the front line of the community, making everybody feel better. They look good and feel better.
Well, I think that's the key. It's what we are actually doing, not only for their physical appearance, but for the psyche on the inside.
Yes.
Like if mama's not happy, daddy's not happy.
Yeah.
The kids aren't happy. Like if mama don't feel sexy, daddy's not getting any.
Yeah, so he.
Well, like, and that's just reality.
Well, the idea is also people are working from home. And you know they're working on the Zoom, and all they're seeing is a headshot. So imagine they're letting their gray hair grow in, 6 months of gray hair,
right?
And then the husbands are now discovering, oh wait a minute, you're not a natural blonde. You're not natural blonde. What? I'm like, there's other ways to figure out if somebody's natural blonde or not. Just putting it out there.
Well, if she ain't feeling sexy, he's not finding out. Okay.
All right. So, and there you
so,
have it.
And that's why we're essential.
Yes.
One of the reasons why we're essential.
I think it's all matters, you know. In the bigger scope, I do believe we are kind of like now, kind of like we're in the epicenter really healing everybody, you know, the salon is. Because when people come into the salon now, we're seeing a lot of new guests. We're seeing like previous clientele or our guests to our brand, to the salon, to the stylist.
We are seeing a lot of new guests.
A lot of new guests. And why is that? And a lot of it is when we first reopened, we were so strict with how the protocol and procedures, mm-hmm. from CDC down mm-hmm. to county, down to mm-hmm. city, we kind of cross-referenced everything. And then you implemented an amazing game plan with the girls, and that was all you, really, right? And well, if we didn't have any of that set in place, I believe that the community would have not been able or not been comfortable coming back to the space.
Yeah. I think every salon's done a great job of getting back.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, we saw salons not wearing masks.
That's true.
In the beginning, we saw salons not doing any type of temperature check. We saw salons like not making people do certain things, washing hands. And not that we're perfect or this or that. I'm just saying that I feel all of those steps and precautions that we took in the beginning has allowed us to be successful now, where our numbers continued to kind of rise, mm-hmm. and we were able to buy the building. Mm-hmm. That's why, because mm-hmm. I felt if we didn't do all these proper things in the beginning, at the very end, mm-hmm. I think that could have very easily tipped the other way. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think our number one goal and job is to make our employees feel safe.
And our guests.
And then in turn, make our guests feel safe and happy. And then that just all goes tenfold, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it was, you know, we always told our staff to be in charge of your own comfort level. If you don't feel comfortable coming back, then that's fine. We can have a different conversation, but just always be in charge of your own comfort level. They helped, you know, with the protocols and the procedures and what they felt comfortable with, what their ideas were. And we just came up with our plan and moved forward. Mm-hmm. When do you think we're gonna get rid of all that?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I guess a lot of that is dictated on, a lot of that is yet to be determined, I guess. You know, just because it's one of those things that we don't want to pivot too early mm-hmm. or too soon. And then something else happens, you know, like, mm-hmm. and so we have to be careful, you know, and I know that restaurants have servers wearing masks, but people are able to eat on the tables with no masks. So that's always kind of one of those interesting things, but they did it. They were able to stay open.
You know, it Texas that lifted the mask mandate?
I think so. Texas and
there's a few states that lifted it.
Alabama, maybe. I don't know. But I mean, I think it's coming soon, and how we do it, what that looks like, we'll just have to take a good hard look at it and pivot when we have to. And I think that's the biggest word of 2020 was pivoting.
Yeah.
And I think every day, it wasn't like a weekly or bi-weekly, it was almost every day.
Every day, yeah.
Like something hit us and you know, and a lot of that is letting it all go because we can't really do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And how do you kind of continue to get beyond that without mm-hmm. having to be consumed with the stress and the worry? Because for me, if we're not okay, then everything else is going to kind of fall after that, right? Being safe and being okay with not being, I'm talking about like stress or this and that, you know, if you become so overwhelmed with stress and worry, you can't produce.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, you know, even working out, even if it's 20 minutes on a bike, you know, in the Peloton or doing something active or going outside and looking, you know, at how grateful we are, you know, where we live and being here in Florida, you know, there's so many much more bigger things that could have gone wrong where we could have not have gotten to this moment. So I'm always trying to live in that gratitude space of like, oh my God, I'm grateful because it's we could have been in California and who knows what that looks like. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think I would be buying a building if I lived there. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think they're just opening up now. Mm-hmm. And they, I think,
so
did
scary,
three
right?
or four shutdowns. So, you know. Kudos to those people out there in California, New York, all the heavy hit parts of the country, or even the world for that matter, because we don't even know what's going on. I know globally, really bad still in France. Mm-hmm. That girl we were talking
to
yesterday.
Yeah, we talked to a woman yesterday. France is just awful.
So
right
it's just kind of it is something that's really, you know, I try not to think lightly of it. You know, I know that we're still kind of driving through it, even though we're possibly
it's hard
see
here
the
in Florida because it's like we're back to normal-ish. Yeah. Like everything's open. Yeah. You can go anywhere you want, whenever you want.
Yeah, beaches are open. Stores, restaurants.
I mean, the only difference is you gotta wear a silly mask, mm-hmm. and that's it. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. I'll wear a mask every day if we can be open. Mm-hmm. But there are parts of the United States and the mm-hmm. world mm-hmm. that are like in lockdown still. Mm-hmm. You know, like the lady in France said that the government isn't telling them anything and they have a curfew.
They're making them wear masks at their house.
Making them wear masks at the house. You get fined and reprimanded if you're not wearing masks in your own home.
Who knows? Like,
it's just
that's
crazy.
Why I always try to be so grateful that we're at where we're at because, you know, we couldn't be doing what we've been doing, you know, and just kind of moving forward, not really dwelling on all of that heavy stuff, just continue mm-hmm. to move forward, you know?
Well, let's move forward with the conversation and talk about social media. I know we had a conversation the other day, some of your old buddies. For those of you that don't know, Philip used to work for Tony and Guy. He was a global director for 10, 11, 12 years with
Tony
and Guy.
Not global.
National. Global. You traveled globally.
Well, yeah,
you
went I did. To
I guess Italy, international.
I don't know what they call it. It's always a different title. Different years or whatever. So,
but anyways, he still has a lot of great connections from that chapter in his life. And we were talking about social media, and you know, some of the newcomers coming up in the game don't even know who these people are, but they're so fucking talented. And the only reason that these younger stylists don't know who they are is because they don't do social media, right? And if you don't do social media, you're irrelevant.
Yeah.
So we were having that conversation yesterday. So you want to dive into that and what that looks like for you?
Yeah. I mean, for us, I know when we first opened Educe, it was about the same time that Instagram had started, mm-hmm. and we had a few stylists that were really gung-ho on it, and so I'm like, yeah, we should do it. I need to get gung-ho on it too, because I don't want to be left behind. Like, I'm like, what's going on over here? What party is it over here?
Well, so, it was and it still is. The train is going, and if you're not on the train, it's passing you by, and already has passed you by.
Yeah, so luckily we got on it early. I got on it early. I wasn't that good at all, and I discovered that, you know, I always loved image like photography and stuff like that. So that was easier for me than like the wording, obviously vocabulary, that's not my strong suit. However, I just powered through all of it and just said, hey, I'm just gonna do this, and kind of leaned in on that. And then just
that
had
drives
fun
me
with
crazy
it.
To this day, yeah. Because your posts, yeah. Oh my God. It does. The spelling and the grammar and the, I'm like, Philip, you can't post this.
But the idea is there, and that's all that matters. And the idea is that I'm actually active on it, and being real and authentic, it does well.
Very
on
true.
There. So
yes.
You can't really, again, all the naysayers, you can't talk, you got to block literally all of it out, mm-hmm. because you just got to drop the stuff. And I see those friends you're talking about doing social now, which is good because they're on it and they're more active, but how they're approaching it is maybe not the best, or you know, best way to do it, or you know, how they're posting, there's no real rhyme or reason, they're just posting. So
is there a rhyme or reason to your posts?
Yeah, I've always, my intention on most of my posts is to show more. Number one is to create the awareness of who I am and that I can teach. So I'm putting it out there that, hey, I want this guy to teach my salon.
Got it.
So that's my intention. So anytime you'll see me doing a cutting video or 10 seconds of this or that, me talking, or my reset videos or anything like that, it's all for the intention of getting other salons to get me in front of them to teach their salon.
Right.
That's my intention. And originally it was to kind of create a new clientele base. So like attracts like, so I was always showing or doing certain type of things that I wanted to bring into the salon. So back in those days, if you wanted to do something really aggressive or a vivid color or do something, you and you didn't have the clientele base, then mm-hmm. you would essentially have to find a model, mm-hmm. do it for free, mm-hmm. almost pay the model, and then shoot them, and then share it. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of steps to that, where you know now it's a little bit different, right? Because it's not just imagery anymore, it's video. Mm-hmm. So it's heavy video, and then showing the videos, and doing the stories, and doing the reels, and doing, you know what I mean? There's mm-hmm. so many layers to it that it can get overwhelming for a lot of people. Even
so,
just
showing, having intention
yeah.
for what you're posting, whether it's look at this beautiful tree or I'm going to attract this person to mm-hmm. do something.
Yeah.
Just having a clear intention on right. when, where, who, and why.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And once you develop that, then that's the key. And for me, it's always been, because I've been in education, I'm a L'Oreal artist, I've been with them for 10 years, I've been traveling, and it's always been my intention to share kind of what I do and the type of classes I do in the mm-hmm. salon and also nationally, but also to kind of get people to like hire me. Mm-hmm. But I did not realize that clients actually like looking at these videos that are made to attract stylists or owners. So clientele, they're coming in because they saw my razor cut video I did.
Right.
You know, like that's really not for them. And I'm like, shit, I'm not trying to get new clients. I'm trying to get new classes.
That's good though.
It is good because it's turned to, and, but it's all, again, being on social, being active, hitting all your marks, and enjoying it because it's all ultimately to have fun, but putting your portfolio out for the world to see, right? So it's really what you're wanting to attract and what you're wanting to get out of it. That's the number one foundation for me. And for me, it was that, and it's been great. You know, it's been cool to see also the friends that we're talking about get better at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that I'm great or anything, but it's just I've had way more experience than a lot of them, and a lot of people discovered me because I was so early on it.
Right.
That helped me become top five in L'Oreal.
Right.
Out of all 300 artists, you know, to be one of the top artists on social media, that is a big thing, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't talk much about that because,
Because you're so humble?
I'm humble.
For those of you that don't know him, he really is, like, super fucking humble. One of the reasons I fell in love with him, but.
Oh, that's so sweet. But yeah, I mean, it's a grind, and it's part of what we do, you know, but I think to your original point is there's so many good artists that unfortunately they don't get shown or they don't have that recognition mm-hmm. because of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not good at social.
Right.
You know, which is kind of
which we've talked
crazy.
About that before. Like just because you're
right, you're so good
or you are not on social media, does that make you any more or less of a better educator? We've talked about one of our first or second podcasts we did.
But no, but like going back to these guys, they're getting better. However, man, I know they're so good, but
yeah,
it's just people are not, they're losing out on the chance mm-hmm. to go see them because their social game or social network, social media is not that strong. So I guess we just need to discover why is that, you know, for them.
Yeah.
Because for me, I've battled a lot of my clientele, kind of how do I disrupt my clientele, get new clients versus keeping the existing clientele base, which I'm grateful for all my clients, always.
Right.
However, you know, the balayage clients are amazing and the root shaded clients, and they're different than the every 4 week, let's do a retouch and the same haircut client.
Talk about disrupting your clientele. Dive more into that. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to the industry? What do you mean?
Well, disrupting your clientele, for me, specifically, because anything that I always talk about, I really try to make it personal because it's something that I've been through, and it's not something I'm making up. So for me, disrupting the clientele base that happened in a couple different ways. One of the ways was working from 6 days a week to 5 days to 4 days to 3 days to 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the strategy that... Behind the chair. So that was something that you were really pushing for me to do because you really were wanting me to step away from the chair, really get into more of the CEO role of the business and really help you with business. And as we've grown, to be able to do that, the discovery for me was going from that many days behind the chair down to only 2 days.
And it was a fight, y'all, let me tell you. For all the hairdresser and all the owners out there that are behind the chair, you know exactly what I mean. That anxiety of, oh shit, I can stop doing hair behind the chair and be the CEO, be the
visionary.
Decision maker, visionary.
It's hard.
You are.
You know, it's hard because like all you know in your life is behind the chair. Mm-hmm. And you have this vision of having a beautiful salon and this and that, but there's so much business behind it. And nowadays, you really have to know numbers and know have a good strategy and have this and that. And I think having a good, keen hand on all those things, it's almost impossible if you're not, like, not behind the chair. You have to get out of it, you know? So it's interesting.
But to go back to the... disrupting your clientele.
Well, disrupting your clientele base is now is where I discovered that obviously going from when you're first starting out as a hairdresser, you work pretty much 24/7. Mm-hmm. You do whatever you have to do, usually later nights, always Friday nights, Saturday nights, weekends, whatever. If you need to do nails, pedicures, like I did, you do it. Facials, whatever.
You did nails and pedicures?
I had to. I didn't do any. I was bad. I was bad at hair, so I had to do it something else. However, that lasted maybe once or twice, and then I was like, I'm not doing that again.
I need a pedicure right now.
So one way was to go, you know, from that many days to working minimal hours behind the chair and then raising the prices. Once you raise the prices, that's going to scale down some of those your clientele base. And then the idea in a perfect world would turn them into, let's just say, my daughter's clients, where my daughter Jaden, she's a level 2 stylist behind a chair now. She's doing great. She's a really talented young girl.
Yes,
and
she's
starting her career, and she's been with us for like 5 or 6 years, which is nuts. Mm-hmm. So she's on fire. So I'm trying to refer her my clientele base.
Or keep them within the salon.
Or a lot
of
them go
within
the
salon.
Within the brand. Yeah. So, and then, but what I didn't see back then was I was going to start getting holes from that, plus the pandemic holes, which are like people that are not wanting to come back because they're afraid or they don't want to be around, you know, whatever. So if I didn't have the clientele base that I have that goes like super deep and super wide, and I'm seeing all those holes in my day, how are you disrupting your client, your list, your clientele base? So for me, number one, the pandemic really disrupted it. And number two, my hours behind the chair disrupted it. So, and then that opened up a lot of opportunity for new guests to come in and take those times.
So I think I'm confused. Clarify, are you trying to encourage people to disrupt their clientele, or are you,
I'm not encouraging that, because right now everybody is kind of like on fumes with their client. But for me, the discovery in it for me was, wow, this is awesome, because now I'm actually able to do much more modern work than the every, you know, 6 weeks root color and let's do a bob. It's very different than let's create this, you know, awesome balayage with a root shade and kind of changing
the stylist that is stagnant, or the stylist that needs to disrupt their clientele for the greater good of their business.
Right.
That's what you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying is you have to look at it in a positive light to turn that around.
You have to.
To maybe
benefit.
Be the hairdresser you wanted to always be by doing Vivids or by doing whatever, and use it as a positive.
Correct. So for me, I know that it's important to kind of always stay up to date with your work. That's why I'm still an educator, because I've always believed that it's important for me to say, hey, I am a L'Oreal professional artist versus I used to be an artist. For me, that is, it's the game changer, because being that I am means that I'm still connected, I'm still current, I'm getting all the trends way ahead before everybody else gets them, I'm getting training on it. So I know that, and I've always felt that gave me a little bit of a step ahead from everybody else.
Like other stylists in the area?
Yeah, but like for guys that have been doing hair more than 20 years, maybe even more than 10 years, if you're wanting to reshift your clientele, by disrupting it, you're able to kind of get new pockets and newer energy in your seats. So that way, it's really an amazing thing because it was a discovery for me. I didn't think that that would happen for me. Because again, I'm not doing social to get new clients. It's just evolved into that because of all of the different holes that I'm seeing in the day. But the holes are being filled with new opportunity to discover new friendships, new guests, new blood, new energy. All of it is really cool, and it kind of revived your career. You know, it revived my behind the chair career, if you will, because I've been so focused on the education element, not the behind the chair element. So there's two arms to it, right? So for me, it was really cool to see how that happened unintentionally. I didn't intentionally try to disrupt them.
But let's talk about virtual education. You just said to always keep talking about it. Education, and so that triggered me. That was one of the things we wanted to talk about. Right, so with the pandemic, everybody wanted to do virtual education.
Well, everybody meaning the product lines.
The product lines, your distributors, your, the people that support you, right? And then most of the salons were screaming, no thanks, I want in salon.
Well, in the beginning, a lot of them were like, oh, okay, that's awesome, and I'll do that.
Were they?
Well, a lot of them in the beginning, because because I try to remind people, how were you when we first got the notice to come back? Right? We were so grateful to just be back to work.
Yes.
Right? We got the green light to kind of just come go back to work, and we were happy and excited. So I think there was an element of that being for the salon owners being like, yay, we actually can have opportunity to share
education. I didn't feel that way.
You didn't feel like that? Mm-mm. Oh, man.
No, because I knew the impact that hands-on in-salon education was, and I always had, and I probably still do, which I should probably work out in my head, because I know virtual's here and it's here to stay in certain aspects. But I was always kind of I'm going to have to see it to believe it on the virtual thing.
Right.
You know?
But I think, you know, it did its part. I think it's good.
It's still doing its part.
I think it's really good to kind of get information to salons faster and certain things, but obviously, like to do a certification that we did and all that, that was really challenging.
A mess.
And I don't foresee it happening in the future, especially for us.
Yeah.
However, I think it was good to be able to have the opportunity to have that and get the certification and get the girl certified in extension work. But, you know, it's one of those things.
I think there's some virtual classes that are good. It's beneficial and it's good, but the hands-on stuff, like certifications, the balayage certifications, extension certifications, hair cutting classes. Like, you really can't do virtual.
Yeah.
It's just, you can, but are you going to get the same impact as if you were teaching somebody, you know, really how to hold a 90 and how to hold your hand position and how to cut, you know? So it's for me as a stylist and as a salon owner, I was not excited about it and I'm still not excited about it. I know that's something that I advocate for my team, that I want in salon education.
Yeah.
I just really, there are certain things, I guess, that the virtual works for, but for me, in salon all day, every day.
Yeah, in salon versus, you know, virtual education, definitely you can't beat the in salon experience.
You can't.
Just because you're getting the eyes of the educator who's trained as an elite educator to come in and really support your team, and they're seeing different things than what you could see on virtual. So I know virtual has its moment and it had its space. However, I'm not sure if that is going to be the wave of the future.
Think it's here to stay?
Well, I think there are some elements that are cool that are coming that are like subscription-based education. You know, you're seeing a lot of that now. Example, Hairbrained. Behind the chair, all these platforms that have built their own little community, they have, you know, thousands of hours of awesome educators, you know.
For online subscriptions.
Online subscriptions. I think those are great because you can get the education, but you don't have to fly there and spend all that extra money. And you know what I mean? You're kind of seeing the same work. And once you get to a certain level, you're able to kind of extract some information and you're like,
That's
oh, I'll try
true.
That technique out.
That's very true.
Which is different than getting a certification.
Yes.
Virtual, right? So there's two different things where I think the subscription thing is a big movement, and I think that's cool.
So a seasoned stylist can look at a subscription-based education or online-based education and take more from
it. Yeah.
Versus more maybe a non-seasoned stylist, mm-hmm. a younger stylist, mm-hmm. kind of, which goes back to the whole you have to know the rules before you break them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which can, the online virtual can get a lot of green stylists in trouble because if they don't know the rules, they're breaking them.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, to that point, there's a lot of these younger stylists, and I talked to many salon owners that their younger staff or their older staff that have been more mature staff that have been with them for 20 years plus in the same industry, same salon, are kind of getting more intimidated by the younger staff that are making same numbers, if not more.
We had that
exactly. So what is that all about? That's a whole different.
That's a great conversation.
Yeah, I mean that's a different topic too because of how the you get your veteran stylists or your stylists that have been doing it for a minimum of 10, 15 years.
I would say 15, 20 years.
15, 20 years. And then you have your girls that are coming out of school 1, 2, 3 years. They're just getting it and they're charging the same amount. Or their average service ticket is the same. And so these...
As a veteran stylist.
Yeah, so these stylists are getting upset that, hey, the older, more mature stylists, they're getting upset at these younger stylists, you know, having similar numbers. You know, I can't be in your salon because, you know, you have these younger stylists that are charging the same as I am and you know whatever it is it's like
well and that's a conversation even obviously we're not going to say the name but we had a stylist who left us because of that reason that our staff was too young and they're you know a multitude of reasons but that to this same conversation
it was the direction of the salon was going young or something
which was really sad because we try to coach that you have to charge your worth you have to charge
Yeah, so if they're not charging for the blowouts or the treatments or the toners.
Yeah, and you can't discount because you like Susie and she's your favorite. Well, if Susie's a doctor and you're going in for her to, you know, give you foot surgery, is she going to give you a discount? Because no, she's not.
Right.
You know, your time is your money. And I think that is just a generational thing, too, where the younger stylists, they get that and they're charging for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Every little blow dry, every little this, that, the glosses, the... You know, they're doing the add-on services.
Yeah.
They're looking at it going, oh, my God, I can make an extra $1,000 a week if I do 15, you know,
treatments
at the shampoo bowls. Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and talking to their clients and telling Susie, you have really dry hair, let's do this, versus a veteran stylist is not understanding that and not understanding that you have to charge for all those things.
Yeah.
And you said you had that recently in another salon too?
Oh yeah, the salon that where I was at, it was a big salon, and they had probably 80 stylists or something like that, but there was a crew of them that have been there for a long time that were getting a little bit intimidated by the younger girls and what that looks like, and my discovery in being in there, it was just like, well, the older crew cannot be intimidated. They have to lean into the younger crew, especially when it comes to social media or whatever.
Right.
I always feel like there is a disconnect with those two worlds, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with our awesome friends, that they're talented, but they're not good on social media. It's kind of like that. And they don't know how to resurface or resurrect their clientele base to kind of get them the numbers that these young girls are getting and attracting. So
they're uncomfortable with having the hard conversation of let's look at your average service ticket versus Susie's average service ticket, who's, you know, year two out of school, and Susie's average service ticket is $20 higher. Why is that? Let's take a deep dive into it. And then we really look at numbers and what you're producing daily and weekly. And it's really hard to have that conversation to somebody that is in the mindset of Susie is catching up to me and I've been doing this for 20 years and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just mad and angry, but they're not hearing or letting, you know, you have to be open to that, to letting your leader coach you and guide you and trusting that process, if they have systems in place to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It's important.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know? I mean, it's one of those things. We evolve as a hairstylist over the years. But I think, speaking for myself, you know, you really have to be open to the younger talents that are coming in. And I always try to remember how I was when I first was coming in. And back in those days, it was very kind of like, you know, tribal in a way, where everybody was kind of tribal, but they're in their individual.
Tribal meaning like brands?
No, tribal meaning their own team. Like tribal, like this is my teepee, like this is my tent, don't come in here. Like this is my station, don't come near me. Don't look at what I'm doing because it's only me and I'm the only one that can do it. Right. So when I first came into the hair world in the early 90s, they were not very open with mentoring like they are now.
Right
now we mentor like crazy.
Yeah.
Before, like 2 years before the girls can go on the floor,
right.
The guys can go on the floor,
right.
Usually. But back then it was not like that.
Right.
People were just hiding. Don't steal my formula. I'm not going to share with you.
Yeah.
So there was no YouTube University. There was no academy. You know, you had to go to either New York or Los Angeles or Dallas or bigger cities to get the information.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very different world back then than it is now. I mean, and it is cool that we've been able to be open and evolve and like share all of our information, knowing that these young kids are going to be the future. You know, like if I do want to get behind the chair, then I have to have faith in their skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And how can I not have faith in them if I don't mentor them or we develop them within our team? You know, it just makes sense. So the people who are not okay with that, then they shouldn't be a part of our team.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? They shouldn't be a part of your team. So
absolutely,
it's kind of, you always kind of have to be cautious and always watch your team. And it kind of evolves itself probably every 3 to 5 years, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the salon purges itself and cleanses itself of the bad apples, if you will, or the ones that didn't evolve with your brand or your thought process and where you're taking the brand. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Maybe it really does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the ones that aren't supposed to be with your brand can move on, and that's okay. And we've talked about this before in other podcasts too. You can lose people and still be fucking awesome. You can, you know, you can fire, let people go and you know, still be a great leader. So, but yeah, I think that's interesting. So you feel like every 3 to 5 years?
I mean, it seems like that, or if not faster, 2 to 3. it's such a, because you put so much energy into the new and really evolving the you know, sometimes, you know, unfortunately, for some reason, people don't see that. And the attention, you have to put more attention to the new talent, because your veteran staff, they should know better because they were there. You know, I think they forget that they were students at one point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, I always pride myself as like, I'm a student of my craft. This is what I do. I'm always a student. Once I get to the point where I feel like I can't learn anymore, or I don't see it changing, then I think that's when I'm giving up the shears, right?
Yeah, so, there's always something to learn.
Yeah.
But the veteran stylists have to realize that they were students at one point, but they're always going to continue to be students.
Correct.
And there's always something to learn. Right. Even at the back, even going to a fundamental of cutting that we teach our girls in the salon. The girls that have been doing hair 10, 20 years, we encourage them to come to those classes, because trust me, you're going to pick up something that you may have just put in the back of your head. You know it, but you might have just filed it so far back. You know, there's always something to learn, and there's always something to pick up. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, our career and our industry, and you have to evolve it. But if you don't, then that's when you really get stagnant, and it kind of, especially our culture, I think it absorbs it and it starts kind of doing a weird natural purge of, okay, this is not right, move on.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of continue to move it forward. You know, we can't stop. So,
all right, honey bud, are you ready to,
yeah, that's awesome.
To hit it?
Yeah,
thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you so much for listening.
For those of you that are listening to us on Spotify or
seeing us on YouTube.
Yeah, don't forget that you can also see us on YouTube. This is actually videotaped. So if you want to see what we look like sitting here, I have no shoes on. Mm-hmm. And in our new space, and I need a pedicure. And Philip's going to give it to me because he did pedicures.
Hey, we're on the floor on a beach blanket in a warehouse of our salon. But I think this is great because
but you can
day,
find us on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, Spotify, all your favorite channels. Check us out, Salon Centered Conversation. So thank you
Salon
so much.
Salon Centered Combos on Instagram.
Yep.
And we will talk to you guys soon.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye.